This month on State of the State, Election 2018, the governor's race and the ballot propositions in Michigan. Welcome to our discussion of context and evidence to inform Michigan policy debates. I'm Matt Grossman, political scientist and director of the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research. And I'm joined by my co-hosts, Charlie Ballard, economist and director of the State of the State Survey, and Arnold Weinfeld, our associate director and MSU's director of urban policy initiatives.
Charlie, who are people favoring for governor, and how are the candidates splitting that support?
Well, we asked the question in the governor's race in two ways. It looks like Gretchen Whitmer has the inside track to the Democratic nomination, so we asked about her. But then on the Republican side, it looks like there's a race between Brian Kelly and Bill Schuette. So we asked Whitmer versus Kelly and Whitmer versus Schuette, not knowing who will be the Republican nominee. Gretchen Whitmer leads in each of those cases, although not by a huge margin, and her lead is a little bit higher over Kelly, 42-34 for Whitmer over Kelly, 41-35 for Whitmer over Schuette. Now, if you add up those numbers, you see that they come to way less than 100%. And I think one of the things that's most striking in the data that we found in this recent survey is that in each of those races, 24% didn't give an answer. That most of those 24% say, I'm undecided, I don't know. Some of them said, oh, I refuse to answer. And some of them tossed out some other name. But that indicates that they're not willing to support either of the people we were asking about.
And that's even when we asked them twice, right?
That's exactly right. The fraction who was undecided was higher. And more than 30%. And then we asked, okay, well, but if you really had to decide, and then some people gave an answer to that second prompt. So these numbers are even after being prompted twice. That shows that I think this race has a lot of fluidity in it.
And of course, it's important to point out that the survey is of the general public and not registered voters. So
that's right. We don't ask whether they're registered, and we don't ask whether they expect to vote or whether they're likely to vote, or we don't ask about their past voting behavior, all those things which could indicate whether they'll actually go to the polls.
Although people this far out tend not to be very good at reporting their likelihood of voting. Turns out even though registration seems like you would know whether you registered, it's some well north of 90% of people claim to be registered, and it doesn't really match the voting records.
No.
And then if you ask people, you know, this far out who's going to vote, a few more will say, well, I'm registered but not going to vote. But surprisingly, when we check back up on people, even those people who say I'm not going to vote, a certain percentage of them do end up voting. So there's a lot more that can happen this far out.
That's right.
Now, one of the things that we've talked about previously is the impact of President Trump, especially on the Republican side of the ledger. Anything you saw in the numbers that would indicate greater Republican support for Mr. Kelly over Mr. Schuette or the other way around?
Well, I think that the Republican support for Kelly or Schuette against Whitmer is strong. We found in the Kelly-Whitmer question, 87% went for Kelly, only 4% for Whitmer. In the Whitmer versus Schuette, 82% for Schuette, 0.3% for Whitmer. So a little bit more undecided when it was right. Schuette versus Whitmer. But in each case, if whoever gets the Republican nomination, that person is going to get the Republican votes.
Yeah.
The question that we didn't ask is, we didn't ask Schuette versus Kelly directly.
Yeah.
And so we don't have direct evidence.
I mean, that is interesting, though, 18% undecided amongst Republicans when you did Schuette versus Whitmer. I think it's important to remember that Mr. Schuette, all three of these candidates, especially Mr. Schuette, is not an unknown quantity. Mr. Schuette has served in the legislature. He's served in Congress. He's been a judge. So there is some history there with Mr. Schuette within his own party, and I wonder if that might not be having a factor, too, in some of the undecideds on that side of the ledger.
It certainly might. I mean, one thing is that the more The more known quantity you are, the more you have, you're likely to have some loyal support. You're also likely to have some people who you've rubbed the wrong way over the years.
Right. Now, I will say this. I had an opportunity to hear Ms. Whitmer, Mr. Calley, and Mr. Schutte at the Michigan Economic Development Association conference held this past week. And I was very impressed with their stump speeches. They each had them down. They gave very good presentations of themselves.
What were the themes of each one?
Yeah, Ms. Whitmer talked about policy issues, including education, talent, and infrastructure. Talked about the need to, especially since she was speaking before a group of economic developers, she was spot on about her views on economic development and economic development incentives and the use of those incentives. Certainly, Governor Snyder did not look at those favorably and eliminated many of those. So I'm sure that what Ms. Whitmer had to say to economic developers in the audience, you know, held some weight. Mr. Schutte talked about, I was very intrigued by some of what he said. He said, I'm not here to manage the decline. I'm here to manage the growth of the state. And much like in line with fiscal conservatives, that meant to him less regulation and less taxes. And Mr. Calley, of course, took great lengths to tout the good things that have taken place in the economy and in job growth during the Snyder-Calley administration and the need to continue that. One thing that was consistent in each of their presentations was this fact that we've heard lately that Michigan ranks very poorly in third-grade reading. And each of them spoke to that and how that would be a priority in each of their administrations. I was a little struck by that. And I was also struck by a theme in Mr. Cowie's speech about civil discourse and the need to get back to civil discourse in the public domain. So I thought they each did very well. Like I said, these are three people who have been around the block a little bit when it comes to their political careers. So they've been honing their messages over the last several months, and I suspect that we'll see a good campaign from each of them moving forward. Even though we did not survey any of Ms. Whitmer's Democratic opponents, she does have a couple herself. So it'll be interesting to see how she continues to hone her message over the course of time.
One thing that strikes me as you talk about that is the whole tax issue. And in the last generation or so, Michigan has cut taxes. We've done that sometimes explicitly by cutting a tax rate. We've more often done it in the quiet and the dark implicitly by we have features of the tax system that don't keep up with the economy. Best example is that the sales tax applies to very few entertainments and services, and those are the things that are growing. Thus, the sales tax revenue keeps shrinking as a percentage. So we're billions below. If we were at the national average of state and local taxes, we would be raising $3 billion a year more than we are now. And so Bill Schutte talks about further tax cuts. Did he say what spending he would cut?
No, and much like he didn't talk about what spending he would cut, Ms. Whitmer did not talk about how she's going to raise money for infrastructure.
That was going to be my next question.
Those specifics are still to come, of course.
Yeah, he's going to cut taxes but doesn't say what spending he's going to cut. She wants to revive infrastructure but is not going to say how she's going to pay for it. So that's a disconnect that reflects a disconnect in the general public, that an awful lot of people in Michigan want more money for schools and more money for roads, and they want lower taxes. And those things are not going to fit together.
We just have to cut waste, fraud, and abuse.
Oh,
right?
Yes, waste, fraud, and abuse, of course.
Now, we do have some new numbers on the ballot propositions as well. How are they looking? Are people going to be able to understand and vote on all of these items?
Well, whether they can understand and vote on them remains to be seen, but we asked about three ballot initiatives that voters may face in November. Part-time legislature, an end to gerrymandering, thus having a citizen commission rather than elected officials to draw legislative district boundaries, and legalization of marijuana. In all three of those, the initiative currently is leading. But the picture is different among the three. Part-time legislature, 48% yes, 35% no, but that leaves almost a fifth of the population undecided. The end of gerrymandering, an even bigger lead, 53% yes, 27% no, but again, 20% undecided. Now, marijuana is the one that right now maybe looks like it has the biggest lead in that, 61% yes, 34% no, and interestingly, only 5% undecided. So marijuana is the, of all these things that we've talked about, the governor and the three ballot initiatives, marijuana is the one where people know what their view is, and there's not a whole lot of undecided.
Yeah, so they're all up, but historically, you usually need to start a bit up. Initiative campaigns tend, not always, but tend to lose support over time, and the spending on the no side tends to be more influential than the spending on the positive side. So people tend to learn things that might make them a little weary of change. It's not that everybody goes in and votes no, but that if they learn something they don't like, it's just easier to vote no on a specific proposal. And so the rule of thumb is usually things need to start at about 2-1 to actually end up with a 50% or above majority. I'd say marijuana might be the exception to that because people have kind of already made up their mind on that and may not necessarily learn a lot. But it could depend on whether, in all three of these cases, obviously, whether they get on the ballot, but then who's actually trying to knock them down.
Yeah, I think that for me, the gerrymandering one is going to be really interesting. Matt, you'll remember we did an IPSR forum on gerrymandering just a few weeks ago. And what became clear to me is that this is going to be a partisan issue, actually, that certainly Republicans have already been speaking out against the current proposal. I've heard some Democrats certainly support it, even though it's pretty clear that the organizers, while one might term them progressives, I did not necessarily see a partisan tilt to that, and they made clear that they have taken no money from the Democratic side of the aisle. Now, that said again, I think that they have an uphill climb, as you noted, because it's a very complicated initiative. I mean, it's not just a citizens committee, but it would involve the Secretary of State sending out a questionnaire to 10,000 random people and then, you know, continually whittling that down until you came up with a group of 13, I believe the number is, you know, to help to work on drawing those lines. So I think it'll be interesting. Gerrymandering will be interesting from the aspect of partisanship, and also it's complicated. And once you start with those negative ads and negative leads on that, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Now, one thing that's interesting in terms of that partisanship, you can understand why Republicans would be less enthusiastic about an end to gerrymandering, because they're the ones who gerrymandered the current districts, and they're the ones who have benefited from the current setup. But our surveys suggested that Republicans actually favor the end to gerrymandering, at least among the Republicans who we surveyed in this particular poll, by 45-33. Now, the favorability was greater for Democrats, 62-26, and independents favored it by 60-25. So yes, it's true that Republicans are less enthusiastic about it, at least in this survey, which was completed 10 months before the election.
Yeah, I think I would expect some of that to change. In previous studies of ballot propositions, we often find that people do learn who's favoring and opposing something, even if they don't learn the details of the proposal. So the best evidence for this comes from a whole bunch of insurance industry ballot proposals and health industry ballot proposals, where people in the end really can't tell you what the initiative does, but they can tell you whether the insurance companies are for it or against it, and kind of which side of the battle they're on between those. So I would guess you're going to find that on these initiatives eventually, if the Republican Party either an entity or a network is really against this. I think Republicans will learn that by the time of the election.
And when you look at some of the numbers too, I was just looking at them. The largest support for gerrymandering was in the age demographic of 18 to 29. Nearly 70% of those 18 to 29 favored an end to gerrymandering, and then that started to drop off in the older age groups. So.
And so since historically older folks are more likely actually to vote, that would tilt against this initiative. I think turnout throughout the population is going to make a difference for all of these things. If young people who apparently have very strong support for an end to gerrymandering, if they turn out in very large numbers, that could tilt the balance.
Well, according to our figures, they also strongly support marijuana. So,
who'd have thunk it?
So they could very well wind up at the polls.
Well, there's a very big age gap in the marijuana initiative. 80% of the young folks want to legalize marijuana, and only 30% of senior citizens. So that is a big, big divide.
That is a big divide. But even in the demographic, you have 30 to 64, 62% still favor legalization of marijuana. So between the boomers, the millennials, and the Z's, they're looking pretty good on that one.
Yeah. So if people are motivated to come to the polls by any of these, then they'll be at the polls for all of them.
For all of it, yeah.
So the part-time legislature is maybe the most confusing of them. We didn't, I think, use the word gerrymandering in the gerrymandering one, so we might have made it a little more confusing, but I wanted to avoid using terms that might have obvious positive or negative valence. But what did people think of the part-time legislature idea? There's, I think, the assumption around Lansing seems to be that this might not get on the ballot, but if it gets on the ballot, it will be hard to stop. Does that seem true?
Well, it certainly is supported by more folks than it's opposed by. In this survey, 47.5% yes, 35% no. But that leaves 17.5% undecided. So, as we've said before, that undecided does cast casts doubt on where things are. The argument, as I understand it, for a part-time legislature is it's sort of a throw-the-bums-out argument. It's sort of a
don't-trust-politicians
kind of a thing.
Yeah, I think they'll focus heavily on the pay of lawmakers associated with this. People always want to cut the legislators' salaries.
Even though it should be pointed out that if we were to pay legislators zero, that would deal with our budget problems for about a minute, because what we pay to the 148 legislators is it's less than a drop in the bucket. It's a drop in the ocean of the state budget, and yet it's a drop in the ocean that gets a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm. But what is the possible argument against this that would resonate with the public? Any ideas there?
Well, yeah, I think going back to something that Charlie mentioned, I think one of the arguments against it was that if you talk to many people, even many people on the street, they'll tell you that term limits has been a huge failure. And so I think the argument against a part-time legislature is if the experience with term limits has been that we haven't seen the kind of experienced legislators on policy issues. It's only going to get worse under a part-time legislature. I mean, who's going to – we already have a hard time recruiting candidates under a term limit system for someone to take 6 or 8 years off of their job. How are we going to be able to recruit people to do this on a part-time basis? So I think the experience issue and recruiting good people to run for office are two arguments that could be used against a part-time legislature.
Certainly, if the idea is that they'll only work part-time, so we'll only pay them part-time, thus they'll get paid less. Well, then there's a big question about who will sign up for that.
Retirees and very wealthy.
Exactly. I think we would have likely a legislature that would be much more tilted than it is now toward retirees and toward people who are of independent means.
Mm-hmm. Even though we have reversed partisan sides on these two initiatives with the gerrymandering reform and the changes to the part-time legislature, you might actually see pretty similar campaigns against them because a complicated scheme by the special interests turns out to be, you know, a pretty good message and especially kind of resonates with those people who may think they just don't know enough about the issue. So it'll be interesting to see if you have the Republican Party running ads saying the districting initiative is a complicated scheme from special interests, and then the Democrats running ads saying the part-time legislature is the same.
Certainly on the gerrymandering issue, I think that that's going to be one of the avenues of attack, is this is complicated, you can't understand, the average guy can't understand this. On the other hand, the advocates, the people who are in favor of that, they've got a really, really simple message, and they're going to try to keep it as simple as they can. They're going to say, voters should be able to choose their elected officials and not the other way around. And that is a message that resonates. Whether that will be strong enough to overcome the complicated scheme by special interests argument is yet to be seen.
So we will find out in November how close the current opinions match the election results. Anything people should take away from our discussion so far, be looking for in the next few months?
Well, you know, in the next few months, we'll eventually figure out who the two candidates are or are for governor. And I think you'll have a clear delineation in philosophy and how to address policy issues. And as I said, you know, this time around, it's going to be two people who have a great deal of experience in legislative politics and in the process as compared to, you know, Governor Snyder coming in as someone who had none whatsoever. So I actually think it could be a good race for governor.
And I hope people pay attention. And part of our job is to provide information that will help people to think about these issues.
Yeah, we'll be thinking through whatever makes it on the ballot. And we hope you join us next time on State of the State.